Welcome to the Litigation Finance Podcast. I'm your host, John Freund. This podcast is brought to you by the Litigation Finance Journal, the only dedicated news source to the litigation finance industry. Please visit www.litigationfinancejournal.com. Our guest today is Cesar Bello, partner and deputy general counsel of alternative asset manager Corbin Capital. Cesar structures and negotiates private transactions across several asset classes with a particular focus on private lending, structured credit, and general co-investment opportunities. Prior to joining Corbin, Cesar worked at Skadden Arps and Ivy Asset Management. Cesar, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, John. Welcome. Glad to be here.
Yeah, great to have you with us. Let's start by having you give just a quick rundown of Corbin Capital. What is the company's background? How did you come to be involved in litigation finance? And what is your investment strategy in the sector?
Sure. So Corbin is an alternative asset manager. We have a legacy fund of funds business, along with a co-investment and direct investment program that we implement in a few different ways. We manage a little over $9 billion in assets. Close to $3 billion of that is for credit-focused funds. A sub-strategy of that is litigation finance, and that has grown over the last 3 years, which is when we started to focus in the space. We put a couple hundred million bucks to work and are looking to do more in different ways, right? So we've invested in dedicated lit fin funds, just as LPs in a fund with managers we think are best in class. We do a lot through co-investments for more bespoke opportunities across different sectors within lit fin. We actually prefer that co-investment path first to kind of get to know our partners, grow with them a little bit, and then assuming we like them, you know, we kind of graduate to a fund check. In terms of what we've done, commercial litigation mainly. We've stayed away from the consumer stuff, lending to law firms, you know, both single case and portfolio financing, some mass torts loans as well. We've done some lit fin around bankruptcy situations. That's something we're seeing more of, sort of tantamount to a DIP facility where the first out is structured via a lit fin investment. We've looked at some IP, haven't done a ton of it, but, you know, not necessarily averse to it, just a higher bar. Some post-settlement stuff as well needs to sort of hit our return hurdle, but for the right risk-reward, we would do that and have done a little bit of that indirectly. So hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, and thanks for the detail there. I'm curious, though, what about the funding industry drew your attention and your interest? So, you know, the stock answer here is that it's non-correlated, right? And I think even compared to a lot of other alternative assets, you could make the argument that it's non-correlated. But aside from that, what else can you say about this asset class that really draws your interest, especially when compared to other alternative assets?
Yeah, so obviously that's a big part of it, right? It's differentiated. You know, it's also less so now, but still, you know, relatively kind of in the fifth or sixth inning and a bit of a white canvas. I would say, back to the uncorrelated point, it's particularly attractive in times of market volatility when you expect more fat tails. We think there's a good chance that that type of environment will persist in the near term. You know, we've seen over the last year those kind of spikes with meme stocks, heightened government intervention, obviously as a result of the pandemic, the political climate, et cetera. So, you know, it was nice for us. We had some good outcomes last March and April when everything else was not working so great. So it really helps the portfolio. But, you know, beyond the uncorrelated nature of it, obviously the opportunity to earn outsized returns, you know, single case risk is generally structured to make a 3 or a 5X. So you're getting paid well for the risk. In private lending for the more credit-oriented type lit fin plays, you're still getting paid there, overpaid, since the sector, I would say, is still largely underbanked, although increasingly less so. You know, the underlying collateral is not well understood by traditional lenders. So mid to high teens rate is sort of our floor. We've lent in the 20s. You know, and they're not easy credits to deal with sometimes, but you're getting paid for it. And you know, back to the market as a whole, it's still, I think, growing, right? The legal services industry is a $1 trillion industry worldwide. Litigation finance has grown a lot. There's growing awareness amongst mainstream corporates that they have assets on their balance sheet that they can monetize. Fortune 500 companies are awakening to this possibility of using litigation finance to sort of, you know, bring cases without sucking up their budget or disrupting their cash flows. There's also a strong ESG angle that comes up in a few different ways. Doesn't get talked about a lot, but that's going to be another tailwind. So all of that together, I think, makes for a pretty compelling nascent asset class.
Well, let's talk about that ESG angle for a minute here. We've discussed this topic a bit on our digital conferences and with some other commercial litigation funders on some podcasts. It's been coming up more and more lately. So let me ask you, how much of a consideration is the ESG aspect here? How important is ESG to investors such as Corbin and also to your LP investors?
Yeah, so I'll give you a little bit on that and our methodology and approach to ESG generally. Obviously, you know, we do a lot more than just litigation finance. But with respect to litigation finance in particular, to start, the easiest way to think about it is that there's not necessarily equal access to justice in our legal system, right? Litigation finance helps level the playing field so David can go after Goliath. And that's obvious and simple to understand, but it kind of, you know, flows through and manifests itself in different ways, right? Take mass torts, environmental cases, for example. It's a long history of poor minority communities being used as toxic dumping grounds. We have opioids, we have sexual abuse cases, et cetera. So from an environmental, socioeconomic, social justice perspective, there's a clear angle there. But back to how we think about it more broadly, our approach to ESG is focused on thoughtful application of ESG factors to enhance our business. And it takes a lot of work, and we've been working on it over the last 2 or 3 years with the help of leading experts in the space and consultants to help us navigate, kind of what remains, I think, a pretty fragmented information environment, right? There's third-party ESG ratings rarely agree with each other. They've had some pretty high-profile big misses with, the Volkswagen emissions scandal, et cetera. So we believe in meaningful integration of material ESG factors and that can lead to a more complete picture of risk and opportunity, driving more informed decision-making with the opportunity to get, better risk-adjusted returns. And, it's obviously top of mind now for clients as well. It wasn't always that way. When we first started, I would say the hedge fund industry was largely a laggard in the space. We realized, the opportunity and potential benefits and decided to take steps to try and really kind of, use our seat at the table. We invest with a lot of hedge funds, obviously, right? So we have an ability to influence them, to kind of push them in the right direction and let them know that we care about it so that they in turn, are more keen to focus on it, and we've seen that happen. The volume of client inquiries on ESG integration has grown significantly. The level of engagement from our managers has seen a big uptick. In short, we think ESG is going to be table stakes for raising assets in the near to medium term. So you kind of need to sort of be involved, have a view, and be thoughtful about how you're thinking about that. For Litfin, again, just to come back full circle, and more generally too, like we evaluate our managers and partners on ESG integration, right? So from questions targeted at the management company level through operational due diligence to ongoing, the process of applying our framework to their portfolios, engaging with them. And for more impact-oriented portfolios, Litfin really can be a nice fit because, as stated earlier, it involves supporting victims without much means, seeking to right a wrong often, right, for more powerful perpetrators, if you will. So again, think opioids, sexual abuse, environmental, et cetera. So it fits nicely with this particular asset class.
So when you evaluate these litigation fund managers, apart from ESG, and apart from the hard numbers, which obviously you're going to look at, but aside from those, What other sorts of things are you evaluating? What's important to you? Is it the types of cases they fund? Is transparency in terms of reporting? Does that come into play? Soft skills, are there any soft skills you look for, or just any other subjective metrics at all?
Yeah, it's really all of that, right? And, you know, the legacy business here is evaluating managers, right? That's what we've done for, you know, over 30 years. Track record is important, but methodology, approach, being able to speak through all of that to get a sense for what matters to the manager. Obviously, Litfin is a big space, so there's many different ways to play it, and there are areas we stay away from. But, you know, when that Venn diagram sort of overlaps enough with a manager that sort of thinks similarly to us or has a particular sub-strategy focus that we think is attractive at the particular that particular point in time, that, you know, that's when it's a good fit. And reporting, valuation, how they mark the book is important. We don't love mark the motion, for example. You know, the size and breadth of the team, their approach to sourcing, all of that, right? And it's really a process, which is, you know, going back to sort of how we prefer to implement, doing some co-investments with folks, getting under the hood, seeing how they work through a deal, seeing oftentimes, you know, how they work through challenges in a deal, it sort of helps us develop confidence and kind of grow the relationship, right?
So let's say I'm a commercial litigation funding manager. I approach you for an investment opportunity. What can I do in the room with you? What sort of is there anything you wish that these fund managers did more of or less of? Any advice you can give to them?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to have a real understanding and self-awareness of where you sit in the marketplace and to be commercial, right? It's hard to raise money. You know, the safe thing to do is to give money to the bigger players. So in particular, if you're kind of starting out, you know, we've seen a lot of people try to raise funds with unrealistic expectations and you know, refusing to sort of partner with people in creative ways to because they want to fund and, you know, don't want to do co-investments, not thinking about the long game really, and not realizing, you know, the best path to unlock capital may not be the one that they, you know, came into the meeting with, right? So really listening and trying to figure out where the happy medium is to find a way to work together. I mean, back to the point about most of the money coming in is going to the established players. I mean, that's the nature of the asset management industry as a whole, right? You know, we also like people who can kind of talk through a bad outcome and lessons learned. That buys some goodwill. We understand, you know, not everything's going to be perfect or work out perfectly, but hey, you know, what would you do differently? What were some really important lessons here that you can apply going forward? Don't just tell us everything's been great, right? But yeah, I would say, you know, being commercial is 80% of it, right? Find a way to get in the door, build trust, and you know, hopefully everybody gets more comfortable and it becomes easier to kind of grow the relationship. The reality is this is sort of long duration money, and that's typically the hardest to raise because you're tying money up for a long time. So it's not necessarily going to be a quick or easy process.
Let's circle back now and discuss risk for just a second. So I want to know how Corbin assesses the risk of a litigation finance investment or maybe even a portfolio of investments. Do you guys view the risk as binary, given the binary nature of a case, and therefore there's a higher risk premium attached? Or, you know, are there mitigating factors that a fund manager can display to maybe offset or reduce some of that risk?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, clearly you want to get paid a premium for being in the space, and, you know, we won't look at anything really south of a net 15 unless it's post-settlement, which is significantly de-risked. Maybe that's not set in stone, but that's kind of where we are. There are ways to mitigate this risk, right, structurally and otherwise. So, you know, we can obviously create our own portfolio of single case risk with different managers and co-investments and sort of create our own diversification. Within a particular deal, you know, for example, on a mass torch loan, there may be sort of built-in diversification. You know, the structuring matters. You know, we can obviously just buy a portfolio or you know, or make a loan again that already has that sort of inherent de-risking. So you know, kind of let us manage that, and you know, you're not in our seat, right? So you're not seeing sort of what we have in the book here or there. So that's a little bit for us to manage, but at the deal level, just to spend a little more time on that, because that's sort of easier to think about and more concrete. The structuring, one of the things I like a lot about the space is that structuring can really help mitigate the risk, right, while preserving a lot of the convexity. You know, you want to get to a point in time where if you lose, you hopefully lose early and small, and you're creating valuable call options that are underwritten to return multiples on your money when you win. That's sort of, you know, the ideal setup in terms of the, you know, the single case portfolio sort of management. Important to focus on the players, right? You know, who they are, the law firms, the plaintiffs. Duration is top of mind and is, in our experience, has been one of our biggest frustrations with the space, especially in light of COVID, things just taking longer than underwritten. You know, we've had very good outcomes on the whole. And, you know, in the end, maybe you would argue it's worked better because we've made more money because some of these things have been outstanding longer. But I'd like them to come in a little closer to underwriting on the duration side, you know, at times. You got to be super focused on collection. Right, we've done some things indirectly there, and there's some really creative shops that have all sorts of expertise in terms of, you know, enforcing and tracking down assets to collect, which can be pretty fun and exciting to sort of be a part of. Valuation we talked about, you know, especially if you're going to go into somebody's vehicle and be locked up for years and you're not in a co-investment where you have better transparency, becomes more of a concern, right? And you know, to bring it all the way around to diversification, it's not just diversification in terms of types of investments, but also types of strategies and managers, right? People play this space a little differently. They're not all doing the same thing. Some are focused on larger tickets, right? Some on smaller tickets that maybe they think are a little bit underserved by the bigger players. Some are swinging harder, you know, trying to make a 4 or 5x, while others are taking sort of lower octane, more credit-oriented approach where, you know, there's a much higher margin of safety and they're playing in the teens. You know, some are looking for legal catalyst and buying equity in public companies, right? That doesn't neatly fit in the traditional LiveFin bucket, but, you know, it's certainly part of the constellation. So it's neat to be in our seat and be able to have exposure to all those different types of managers and kind of create our own book. You know, and then this is more boring technical stuff, but you got to focus on the tax. Generally feels very unsettled and all over the place, and that kind of matters when you're thinking about structuring. But I mean, that's roughly, you know, the main sort of bullets that we sort of go into every investment with.
Yeah, and that's a good, real good bird's eye view there of a lot of the aspects of the industry that come into play. So I want to keep that that sort of zooming out mentality for my final question here, which is, when you look at this industry, what opportunities are you seeing down the road for the funding industry? How do you see this industry developing over the coming years?
Good question. You know, I think everybody would tell you it's probably going to grow, and there's probably going to be some price compression as the asset class matures. But, you know, maybe something a little bit more unique that you won't hear as much is I really would like it to sort of evolve into having a more active secondary market, which would help with the duration issue. As anything that helps generate liquidity, you know, we would view as a positive. And obviously it would help with valuation price discovery as well. So there's a lot of activity now. Private equity funds and private credit funds in terms of secondaries and continuation funds, as maybe some of the, you know, older vintages are getting long in the tooth. It would be interesting, to have some growth there, right? Because I think similarly, there's a good amount of the bigger funds running up against the end of their fund life, and they're going to be motivated to sort of solve for that. So maybe some dedicated firms looking to buy, individual Litfin claims or LP interest in Litfin funds from investors who've just been in it for 8 years and kind of, need to go on to the next thing. That would be a natural evolution of the asset class. I think there's some characteristics here that make it harder for a secondary market to flourish in the space, right? I mean, this stuff is idiosyncratic and hard to underwrite. You're not buying, IBM bonds, right? But it's doable. I think it'll happen eventually, and when it does, I think it will be a very positive signal for the asset class.
That's a great take, and definitely we've heard about secondary markets before. It has, popped up here and there, but really, like you said, it has not really matured, and that could should be a harbinger of a more maturing industry for sure. So, Caesar, thank you so much for your frank answers to these questions and going really in depth with us on what you guys look for when assessing this industry. We really appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, John. Great being with you. Take care.
Yeah, you as well. And if you're interested in learning more about what Caesar and Corbin are up to, you can visit them at their website, www.corbincapital.com. That's Corbin Capital.com. And thank you all for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll see you on the next episode of the Litigation Finance Podcast.